culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to consider a great proposition, which is that if you are aggressive in any war, in any attack, the chances are you're going to lose. I believe history shows that, and I believe history is showing it again regarding what people call the culture war in America. Who started the culture war? Why? And who is going to win? To talk about all that, nobody better to speak to than historian, political science professor at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania, America's very finest, in my humble opinion, independent educational institution. And I mean independent, they don't take any money from the government, which is pretty admirable. And it's also a beautiful campus with great student body, etc. And that campus faculty, led by Professor Paul Kengor, who is the author of numerous bestsellers, including his most recent book, which is posted on our website, The Devil and Karl Marx. Paul, it's great to speak to you. Belated happy 4th of July.
Thank you,
so
Mike.
First of all, who do you think, if you look at this, and this is a subject of a Peggy Noonan column, which is actually in the newspaper tomorrow. That column says the culture war was actually a democratic offensive. They were the aggressors. Do you think that's accurate?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, thanks for not wishing me a happy 1619. So I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, look, there is no question that the Democrats, that the liberals have been the ones who are the aggressors in this. And in fact, I mean, I think of, I give so many examples, but I mean, my mother-in-law, if I could invoke my mother-in-law here, she's a sort of classic example. She's late 70s, and she's somebody who completely stayed out of politics, didn't even pay attention. I doubt really even voted, and probably, you know, at one point, like 30 years ago, probably would have, you know, considered herself a Democrat. That's how she was raised. My grandparents were the same way. And yeah, they were dragged into politics kind of kicking and screaming because of the aggression of the left on the culture issues. And for so many of them, and I could say this for my family on my mom's side, who were all like kind of old-time, blue-collar, Catholic Democrats, what brought them into politics was their own Democratic Party going off the deep end on issues like abortion. I mean, my grandparents couldn't even conceive of same-sex marriage and transgenderism, right? LGBTQ. But they've been the aggressors. And I've seen this so many times, Michael, where people on our side will respond to a war of aggression that the leftist cultural warriors have launched. And they'll say, you're a culture warrior, right? Stay out of this. Well, stay out of it. We're just responding to you guys assaulting us. We're just fighting to protect our basic freedoms and religious liberties. So, yeah, there's no question that they started it, and they're not stopping either. It just gets worse and worse.
Well, it's like any people fighting a defensive war. What you're trying to do at the very core is to defend your home. And
right.
I think that's the question for so much of what people call culture war issues. When you have this issue with which I'm sure you've heard about the educator who was hired to teach pornography literacy to public school students, that's an aggression in the culture war. It's basically suggesting to people that marriage isn't necessary, which is fascinating because at the same time they're suggesting that marriage is necessary, but only for gay people.
Right. Well, yeah. Look, I have an academic colleague that I heard from a few weeks ago at a very prestigious school, top 20 every single year, and he's just furious that in his little tagline at the bottom of his email, where he lists, you know, assistant professor of whatever and gives his phone number and his fax number and email address, he has to put preferred pronoun. And he says, why do I have to put that there? Right? I'm a guy. I'm a mister. And he's being pressured to even put down in the space preferred pronoun, right? And that's not a matter of him facing a situation in a classroom where maybe he has a transgender student and he's in a conundrum because he doesn't want to refer to the student as he or she or whatever because it goes against his religious beliefs. This is a matter of him being pressured, I think maybe by the school, to put preferred pronoun in the bottom of the thing. So all he's doing there is playing defense. Right? He's not on offense. He just wants to be left alone. He wants to be left alone to identify himself the way people have identified themselves since Adam and Eve.
Well, and by the way, it's exactly like that case with Jack Phillips, the now notorious baker in Colorado, who decided he was perfectly willing to do business with anybody. He just didn't want to make cakes that conveyed a certain message. And the message being supporting same-sex marriage.
And they keep coming after him. They keep coming after him every few months with a new cake. Yeah.
Right.
They will not leave the poor man alone. I mean, it starts off with, you know, two gay guys, and then eventually it's a Satanist, right? And it's a transgender person. And they just come. It's like every few months, like clockwork, they check their calendar, and they go banging on his front door with some sort of new cake that they want designed that they know goes against his religious freedom, and the poor guy never gets out of court. And all he wants to do is just bake his cakes in peace. They could go somewhere else. You know, that's a war of aggression. That's exactly right.
And we were talking right before you came on about the fact that historically, usually when someone is a clear aggressor in a conflict, you're at a disadvantage. You tend to lose. Hitler, for instance, was a very clear aggressor against another evil dictator, Stalin. Stalin seemed to be glad to roll over to Hitler and was gobsmacked when Hitler decided to launch Operation Barbarossa and to attack the Soviet Union. Hitler lost badly. And when that happens, when someone basically decides to make war, doesn't that put you at an intrinsic disadvantage?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you're making. And I mean, just look at Operation Barbarossa, right? I mean, the Germans were far superior to the Red Army, and the Red Army lost an absolutely enormous number of men. I mean, at least 10 million. Some historians think maybe even close to 20 million. But they were still able to weather the storm and win. And I think here maybe a different kind of, maybe this is a better example given what we're talking about with cultural revolutionaries, but look at the French Revolution, right? And the Jacobins, the Maximilian Robespierre, they were aggressors in a cultural war of aggression where they attacked everything from family to the church. I mean, the calendar, they changed seven-day weeks because it's the 7 days of the Lord to 10-day weeks. They started off the year 1794, became the year zero, the same thing that Pol Pot and his group did, the Khmer Rouge, declared war in the literal Anno Domini calendar of all things. And you know, those Jacobins, they lost that. They lost that war. It ends up bringing in Napoleon, another aggressor, by the way, right, who eventually goes too far. So, yeah, it's a very interesting point. Usually the aggressors in the conflicts, I'd have to really look at this, probably.
I'll tell you another good example that's very relevant to the world today, which is the birth of the State of Israel. Israel did not begin the war for independence. Israel had finally, after 2,000 years, won an independent state. They were very glad that they were attacked by five different Arab nations all at once. It didn't go so well for the Arab side in that war or since. When we come back, we have so much more to talk about the war about voting rights, really. Thanks to Paul Kangor. Go to our website, check on the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Michael Medved.
On the Michael Medved Show, considering the culture war that is currently raging, we spoke yesterday about a very powerful column by Joseph Epstein in the Wall Street Journal about how this has not been an initiative of the right that looked at the way things were going, the way things were drifting, and said, oh, we have to change this radically. We have to make enormous changes or America is going to be lost. It's been the agent of change, and that's part of what the liberal idea is supposed to be, is to be the agent of change. And the expectation being that they will win big time by fighting on all of these issues and treating them all as if they're Armageddon. And a very good example of this, and there are many more, including the teaching of critical racial theory and the teaching that the United States is a corrupt, doomed, evil, and deeply racist and exploitative and oppressive republic. Not even a republic. Basically, the criticism of the United States is bitter and it's aggressive. And as Peggy Noonan says in her column, and I think she's completely correct, it's likely to produce a great deal of backlash. Paul Kenger was making the point about his mother-in-law, who's an old-style Franklin Roosevelt Democrat. Franklin Roosevelt was somebody who actually would not fit in with today's Democratic Party, maybe with some of its spending and social programs, so economic programs, but certainly not with its bitter and contemptuous criticism of the United States itself. And that craziness that you hear so much from them is actually brought up in this voting rights battle that continues to rage. And I wanted to play... Jeremy, there was a Latasha Brown, who is co-founder of Black Votes Matter, agreed with the characterization that basically what the Republicans are doing with extremely minor voting regulation adjustments is the equivalent of American apartheid. This is clip six. Listen.
To anybody who listened to that press conference after the meeting with the president, it was sobering, I thought, Latasha, to say the least. Is Mark Morial right? Is this an effort to impose a system of American apartheid?
Oh, absolutely. He's 100% right. You know, we have to accept that right now, democracy, American democracy, is being tested. And we're going to have to decide as a country, as a nation, and the leadership of this nation, how we're going to respond to it.
Okay, American democracy is being tested. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, that you're not able to push back and overrule the decision made by the elected representatives in Florida and in Texas about to, and Georgia and elsewhere, and you're not able to overturn. How does that doom American democracy? Please explain to me. How does it change things utterly? This is one of the problems that I've had with so much of the rhetoric about January 6th. And I do make no excuses for January 6th. I think it was loathsome. I think it was reprehensible. I think what happened, I think the way the administration handled it, frankly, was appalling, all disgusting. But it was not the end of American democracy. It was not worse than the 9/11 attacks. It was not likely to kill a lot more Americans. That is one of the statements by a former Republican, Steve Schmidt, of the Lincoln Project. Just listen for a moment. It's extraordinary and so far over the top. Here's Steve Schmidt speaking about this in clip three.
My friend Matthew Dowd, our friend, you know, talked about this. He couldn't be more right. The 1-6 attack for the future of the country is a profoundly more dangerous event than the 9/11 attacks. And in the end, the 1-6 attacks are likely to kill a lot more Americans than were killed on the 9/11 attacks, which will include the casualties of the wars that lasted 20 years following.
Okay, how were the 1/6 attacks likely to kill a lot more Americans? I mean, were they reprehensible? Absolutely. But how was it supposed to happen? In other words, you can't have it both ways. Either this was a serious, well-organized, real threat to the integrity of our elections, or it was a disgraceful departure from sanity, decency, or any realism or restraint. I think the latter is true. And when it comes to talking about the voting rights issue, this is another area where it's the Democrats who are aggressing, who are pushing this enormous series of changes in the so-called For the People Act, H.R. 1. This is part of what Kamala Harris, the Vice President of the United States, had to say about it. This is clip 11.
We are going to assemble the largest voter protection team we have ever had to ensure that all Americans can vote and have your vote counted in a fair and transparent process. And again, I want to make clear that this is about all voters. It's about all voters. This is not about Democrats or Republicans. This is about Americans. This is the fight. This is the fight of our lifetime. This is the fight of our lifetime. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. We will always remember our history. We also understand their legacy and that we are a part of that. And in that way, there is a continuum. So I say, in that context, this is the fight of our nation's lifetime. And we need your help.
A fight of our nation's lifetime over voter ID, over how many hours early voting is going to be open. We didn't have any early voting years ago. And by the way, the idea that early voting is always going to help Democrats is simply not true. I can think of an election that was almost but not quite decided against Democrats because of early voting. What election am I talking about? I'm actually talking about the election of 2000, and we're so close in Florida. What was the problem with early voting? It was in the very last stages of the election, before people's that only after many people had started marking their ballots, that there was that nasty shot at President Bush about who was then candidate Bush, Governor Bush, about him having had a drunk driving traffic citation that he had not disclosed. And that cost him votes. All the polling shows it. And yet people who did early voting never heard about it. Could that have swayed the 527 votes in Florida that made a difference? We'll get to that and to more on these sweeping tides of culture war on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, I mentioned before this fine column by Peggy Noonan. She actually cites, and cites very respectfully, a very telling piece, as she puts it, from a man of the left who's a journalist named Kevin Drum, who has written for Mother Jones, which is an ultra-left-wing magazine, and Washington Monthly. And on July 3rd, right on the eve of our national holiday, he posted some thoughts about why the Democratic Party is headed for self-destruction. Peggy Noonan writes, what he said is the obvious, but it wouldn't be obvious to all his readers. And those to whom it is obvious wouldn't want it said. He titled the piece bluntly, "If You Hate Culture Wars, Blame Liberals." And he points this out. It is not conservatives who have turned American politics into a culture war battle, he writes. Since roughly the year 2000, according to survey data, Democrats have moved significantly to the left on most hot-button social issues. while Republicans have moved only slightly to the right. He cites data on issues from abortion and religion to guns, same-sex marriage, immigration and taxes. Wait a minute, how about legalized drugs? The numbers suggest the obvious conclusion that over the past two decades, Democrats have moved far more than Republicans have moved right. He's not personally unhappy with this, but Democrats should be concerned, he says, that they are moving further and further away from voters in the middle. And by the way, think about that issue for drugs for a moment. And think about, well, you think about Michael Dukakis, okay? He was a Democrat who obviously did not win the presidency. He was a lame candidate. But can you even imagine the ticket of Michael Dukakis and Lloyd Benson endorsing legalized marijuana? Or what many Democrats seem to endorse altogether, which is legalized drugs, period. Legalized methamphetamines, legalized cocaine, legalized... Basically, there was an understanding, at least by Democrats like Dukakis or, say, Walter Mondale, even John Kerry, as recent as that, would understand that legalizing drugs is going to trash up our cities, is going to raise the crime rate, is going to feed the homeless population, and not just feed them drugs, feed them ruined lives. And it's unthinkable that you now have, as an official Democratic position by so many leading Democrats, the idea that, well, take Joe Biden, for instance. Joe Biden went from what could be described as a moderate addition on abortion to a radical pro-abortion position. How? Because if you're taking a moderate position, then you say that, well, there's certain cases where abortion should not be permitted, but generally we should leave it up to a matter of personal decision. But once you are in favor of having the government fund abortion, then you're no longer, quote, pro-choice. You're pro-subsidizing that choice. You are pro that thing that you are subsidizing. You don't subsidize something that you're morally neutral on. You don't subsidize something that you're practically neutral on. And this is where the Democratic Party has so dramatically shifted and left people in the center behind. He says, Kevin Drum, who Peggy Noonan cites in her piece, And again, it's a very important piece. He cites by saying, for God's sake, please don't insult my intelligence by pretending that wokeness and cancel culture are all just figments of the conservative imagination. Sure, conservatives overreact to this stuff, but it really does exist. It really is a liberal invention. And it really does make even moderate conservatives feel like their entire lives are being held up to a spotlight and found wanting. Peggy says, good on him for speaking truth to rising power. And some of the examples of this are so striking and so crazed. If you take a look at, for instance, this quick story, the story of kids at the Columbus Academy who were expelled from school after their parents spoke out against the divisive messages and the race-based messages of critical race theory. This is a report from ABC6. Listen, it's a
kids
clip
kicked
one.
Out of school because of their parents' beliefs. Two moms say it happened to their children, and now they're pushing back.
Now, the pair have been campaigning against what critics call critical race theory, and they say that Columbus Academy, one of the best-known private schools in Ohio, expelled their kids.
Luann Stoya has been digging into this hot-button issue, reaching out to the people involved. So, Luann, the debate just gets more divisive.
several hundred parents have joined the Pro-CA coalition campaign to rally against what they call political extremism. Organizers tell us they believe Columbus Academy is discriminating against conservative thinking and pushing progressive ideas on race.
Then, of course, our children were expelled.
Okay, expelled because their parents disagree with the desire to portray the entire American experiment, the entire American experience, as an exercise in racism. Peggy Noonan says this: the cultural provocations that are currently tearing us apart do certainly and obviously come from the progressives. And the left seems to have no prudent fear of backlash. They don't seem to believe public opinion counts for much anymore. And then she cites a Randy Weingarten speech, head of the American Federation of Teachers, that we played yesterday. Randy Weingarten made this clear in her big speech this week to union members. She said parents who are rising up against the teaching of what it calls a critical race theory aren't opposing, as they perceive it, a radical and destructive theory in which they fear to see their children indoctrinated. No, they are bullies. They are culture warriors who are trying to stop teachers from teaching students accurate history. It was a very aggressive speech. Yes, it was. And Peggy writes, I end with what I think is the left's misreading of its position. They act as if they've got everyone on the run, including those who show their movement the greatest respect in corporate suites and private offices. But I think something unspoken is going on. As a journalist based in New York, you meet a lot of executives, corporate leaders, people in the arts and education. They publicly support the woke regime, speak the lingo. They're on board with the basic assumptions, and much early support was sincere. But they have grown indignant at and impatient with the everyday harassments of woke ideology. Deep down, many of them would like to see the left knocked back on their feet. I think the left is overplaying its hand. I think she is entirely correct. And this is not just on the idea of critical race theory. It's on everything. It's on a basic perception of America and what America really is. Speaking about what America really is, there's the issue of vaccines. And is the problem now solved by a new rap song? We will play it for you and give you a very important Michael Medved music review. The original song, the original song had a somewhat different title. And it all has to do with your understanding of one word. The title of the song is Vax That Thang Up. What is a thang, T-H-A-N-G? We'll get to that and more coming up.
Your outlet for outrage.
Outrageous.
The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, time to voyage back into the past. I'm sure will be a nostalgic journey for many of you. There was a very popular song at the very beginning of the 21st century, and it was by an artist named Juvenile, and the song was called Back That A-Z-Z is the way they spell it. Back That A-Z-Z Up. And it became a tremendous hit. And now it has been reissued by the original artist, Juvenile, together with other rap legends, Manny Fresh and Mia X. And their product is the subject of our brand new Michael Medved Music Review.
The Michael Medved Music Review. Covering the creative geniuses whose timeless artistry can move us.
inspire us and enrich our lives. And now, it's time for the Michael Medved Music Review.
And the name of the new song is BLAK Presents Vax That Thang Up. I have an idea what a thang is. I think a thang is what is covered frequently by a thong. Would I be right? I think I'm right on this. This is a song that was prepared by BLK. It's the largest dating app that is made particularly for black singles. And it is partnered with the rap legends Juvenile, Manny Fresh, and Mia X, who describes herself as the mother of Southern gangster rap. I did not know there was a separate category of Southern gangster rap, but apparently, well, yes. She returns to the iconic rap classic. We already mentioned its original name. It's now become a new anthem meant to be for the Harold era and movement to get Americans safely vaccinated. It's called Vax That Thang Up. And the first verse and chorus sound like this.
You finna online date chat, find a mate chat, open up BOK ass, okay, yeah, profile picture looking tight chat, nice chat, got your bio reading right chat, precise chat, but before you find a date chat, you gotta wait chat, gotta go vaccinate chat, get it straight chat, girl, you look good, want you vax that thing up, you's a handsome young brother, want you vax that thing up, dating real life, you need to vax that thing up, feeling freaky all night, you need to vax that thing up, girl, you look good, want you vax that thing up, you's a handsome young brother, want you vax that thing up, dating real life, you need to vax that thing up. Feeling freaky all night, you need to vax that thing up.
Okay, the words might be difficult to understand. So here, a helpful transcription and a reading in a properly respectful context. You find a online date, yeah. Find a mate, yeah. Open up BLK, yeah. Okay, yeah. Profile pic looking tight, yeah. Nice, yeah. Gotcha bio reading a right, yeah. Precise, yeah. But before you find a date, yeah, you gotta wait, yeah. Gotta go vaccinate, yeah. Get it straight, yeah. Girl, you looks good, won't you vax that thang up? You're a handsome young brother, won't you vax that thang up? Date in real life, you need to vax that thang up. Feeling freaky all night, you need to vax that thang up. Well, there's more. There is the second verse. Listen, this is 8B.
I know you can't stand it, no holding hands. But when we get the shot, we gonna be romancing. Girl, you could be the queen after quarantine. We could meet up at the spot and we could do the thing. Internet date chat, I'm your mate chat. Download the app, shawty, you ain't gotta wait chat. I love it when you hold me, eggplant emoji. You could be the young hot thing, I'll be the OG.
Girl, you look good, want you vax that thing up. You's a handsome young brother, want you vax that thing up. Dating in real life, you need to vax that thing up. Feeling freaky all night, you need to vax that thing up. Girl, you look good, want you vax that thing up. You's a decent looking brother. Want to vax that thing up. Had your full sleeve, need to vax that thing up. Herd immunity, want to vax that thing up.
Those lyrics presented by Manny Fresh. I know you can't stand it, no hand holding hands, chick. But when we got the shot, we gonna be romancing. Girl, you can be the queen after quarantine. We can meet up at the spot. And we can do the thing. Internet date, yeah. I'm the mate, yeah. Download the app, shorty. You ain't got to wait, yeah. I love it when you hold me, eggplant emoji. You can be the young hot thing. I be the OG. OG, I think, means old gangster. Girl, you looks good. Won't you vax that thang up? And then the conclusion of this epic contribution to our civilization. This is 8 C. If you want to get sticky and hot, go, 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 get the shot. If you want to smash some dude named Scott, go, 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 get the shot. Now go get the shot, go, go, get the shot. BLK says go get the shot. You want to smash with Scott, smash, smash with Scott. Then BLK says go get the shot. Okay, what we just heard there was, nah, 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 nah. If you wanna get sticky and hot, go, 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 go get the shot. If you wanna smash some dude named Scott. Who is some dude named Scott? I'm not sure what that means. Go, 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 go get the shot. I guess Scott rhymes with shot. Now, go, go, get the shot. Go, go, get the shot. BLK says, go get the shot. Wanna smash with Scott? Smash, smash with Scott. Then BLK says, go get the shot. By the way, if there's someone out there listening to us now who understands the reference to the dude named Scott, Jeremy, do you know who is the dude named Scott? Who is it? He's lucky, I guess. Go, and I'm not sure about the eggplant emoji either. But see, there's a lot of cultural layering here, a lot of unpacking, I think they say in academia, that can be done. If somebody wants to make a contribution on this one, you can call us at 1-800-955-1776. Now, let me say, this is not a joke. If this rap song can save some lives, and it could, I'm very happy. I'm glad that it will. And by the way, it does show a certain amount of public spirit because, look, I am sure that in terms of the market for BLK, there is not an overwhelming sense that this is what we have to do. This is where we have to go to talk about the COVID-19 vaccines. This is a public-spirited effort. And congratulations to them. I am not sure that this counts as one of the indelible contributions to popular music. Speaking about indelible contributions to popular music, we have a number of contributions to popular culture. A new film with Chris Pratt. It's called The Tomorrow War. And we've all heard about the Forever Wars. Well, this is a tomorrow war. It doesn't take place now. It takes place only after you get transported to the future. We will be reviewing that. We'll be reviewing the new Black Widow film with Scarlett Johansson and a fascinating cast of supporting players. And also a big news Steven Soderbergh film that's about a potential conspiracy back in 1954 in the auto industry in Detroit. It is a complex, twisty film noir called it's called No Sudden Move. And we won't make too sudden a move. Coming up next hour, talking about a book with a provocative title and a very provocative theme. The provocative title, The Empty Planet. The theme, what countries are doing, must do, and maybe should avoid doing to deal with the fact that we have falling populations almost everywhere. At one time, people thought that would be a great blessing. How's that working out? We'll be speaking about that, plus a call of the week involving the former Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Yes, he's back. And not just on the Michael Medved Show, in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Go, go.